Começamos, Luís?
Bora!
Bom dia a todos! E a minha voz não está bem. Bom dia a todos, primeiro que tudo, muito obrigado por terem vindo. Hoje sei que está aí um dia tramado de trânsito, por isso é provável que nós tenhamos pessoas aí a chegar ao longo da sessão. Espero que consigamos encher completamente aqui o auditório. Hoje é um grande dia, vamos ter o webcamp onde vamos quebrar algumas tradições no que têm sido os eventos aqui da Microsoft. É capaz de ser uma das primeiras vezes em que nós vamos abrir completamente o livro e convidar tecnologias que não são Microsoft, e espero que vá muito de encontro ao que vocês procuram. Tenho aqui o Luís ao meu lado.
Sim, eu também, já agora, porque o João é que vai fazer as despesas da casa hoje. Mas queria, de qualquer maneira, agradecer vocês estarem presentes. Este evento, digamos que é um evento que a gente temos repetido nos últimos anos. Já tivemos cá a presença do John e do Matt no último, portanto, pá, muito obrigado por terem voltado. E também um grande obrigado ao Cris. Thank you. Porque, na prática, tal como o João disse, e nós já tínhamos começado, digamos, este trend na última vez, é tentar juntar aqui tudo aquilo que é web e não apenas aquilo que é web Microsoft, ok? E fazer disto, digamos, ou tentar fazer disto o maior evento web em Portugal, ok? Portanto, João.
Continuando a fase de agradecimentos, este evento não foi possível sem nós começarmos a trabalhar com a comunidade web, não só as pessoas que trabalham com Microsoft, de facto. Juntámos uma equipa de pessoas que sabemos que trabalham ativamente com a comunidade e felizmente conseguimos muitos parceiros que tanto vão colaboraram na criação da agenda, no contacto com os speakers e muitas das sessões são providenciadas por estes parceiros nossos. E isto será um livro sempre aberto, vocês só têm que interagir connosco e quem tiver conteúdos para os próximos eventos, nós queremos mesmo que seja um grande reflexo do crescimento da comunidade. Pronto, primeira nota importante. Nós queremos, e é muito importante, que vocês usem as redes sociais. Eu sei que o Twitter em Portugal não é muito utilizado, mas queremos também mudar isto, porque, de facto, quem trabalha em web tem muita coisa a retirar do Twitter e do Facebook também. Por isso, usem e abusem. Inclusive, nós temos até um desafio. Gostávamos muito que um dos Twitters vencedores, ou o post de Facebook original, nós vamos dar uma prendazinha particular a essa pessoa, ok? Que será contactada, nós temos os vossos contactos e será contactada depois. Por isso, usem e abusem das redes sociais. Seguindo, pronto, o meu nome é João Almeida, primeiro que tudo, agora já depois de ter falado uns 5 minutos, eu trabalho maioritariamente para o Windows Client e para web. O Luís trabalha mais focado na parte da Azure, mas também web. E nós trabalhamos, somos as pessoas com mais cariz técnico aqui para Portugal e somos provavelmente as pessoas que vocês devem chatear à vontade, porque nós conseguimos falar com a comunidade e facilitar-vos a vida.
Chatear é maneira de dizer.
Exatamente. Temos um grande dia pela frente, temos 24 speakers, como eu disse, de várias plataformas diferentes, que vão falar de tecnologias diferentes, e eu espero que isso seja claramente um ponto de viragem aqui nestes eventos. Finalmente, porquê web e porquê now? E porquê agora? Nós temos um ponto de viragem grande na nossa plataforma. Começou não com o Windows 10, mas há um foco muito grande na parte do web no Windows 10 e que vão ser explicadas aqui, principalmente na keynote, em algumas das sessões, o que é que a Microsoft está a fazer para resolver grandes dos problemas que os developers web têm atualmente e que passaram nos últimos anos. Por isso, é claramente uma das mensagens principais que nós queremos aqui dar. Hoje, e para me calar, porque eu sei que vocês querem ouvir os nossos featured speakers, os grandes rockstars que nós temos cá hoje e que mandámos vir de todo o mundo, vamos ter o Chris Allman. I'm going to change to English so that they can understand and so they don't think I'm insulting them or something. So... So Chris Allman, he is an ex-Mozilla guy. He moved to Microsoft when?
February.
So he has been working on the web platform for years and years. And I love his sessions. So I presume you will all love his talks.
Okay? Or else.
Or else. John Galloway. So John Galloway was here last year. Yeah, so they loved it. He was here also with Matt, and they loved this so much. They think and they confirmed it that the audience, you guys really rock. So they compared with other countries and they say you are very motivated and that you participate on this event. And finally, Matt Veloso. So he said he was here only for the bacalhau. It all started on Twitter, but no, he's a rock star speaker and a very technical guy. I really love the job that you have done recently, and we'll see some of his projects that were worldwide, and you'll have some of his experience. Okay, back to Portuguese. A comunidade é um ponto muito importante em que nós vamos querer aqui estimular e mostrar algumas iniciativas, ok? De qualquer forma, eu preferia deixar essa parte mais para o fim, depois deles falarem. Eu queria convidar para já o Chris Allman, que vai falar um pouco sobre a plataforma web e a visão dele, ok?
Chris.
Matt, aí, Chris.
Matt or Chris, whatever.
Hello. So yeah, everything there worked wonderfully until I started using it, so we'll see how that works out. Excellent. First bug. Wonderful. A second.
Do you need sound?
Nope, I'm just starting a recording, that's why. Boop. Dum dum dum.
Alright, hi. I'm Chris. I'm from England. I'm not from England. I'm from Germany, but I live in England. So I've been in London for 15 years. That's why I speak fast, and I only have half an hour time. If you're not a native English speaker, life is cruel and full of disappointment, and you should get used to it. I also got asked right today to actually come up with something to give an introduction about what web compatibility means. And this afternoon, I'm going to do a more in-depth talk about what we're doing with that, with our browser and with ES6 and all the other new cool things that are coming out there. Now, as I didn't want to do another slide deck, yesterday night I spent a bit of time writing a interface like this, and I thought I'd give you an information about what I'm doing on the web and how I like the web. I've been in a long-term relationship with the web, and that's why I thought I'd give it a Tinder-like interface to show you what I like about the web and what I don't like about the web. If you don't have enough pictures of fluffy animals in your life or information about JavaScript, you can follow me on Twitter at CodePoet, where I tweet a lot. People have been accusing me of having people in my basement that tweet for me, but it's actually just me. Now, I love the web, and I've been with the web for a long, long time, and it's basically been my career. I don't have any real skills, like social skills or something like that. My hands are a bit like that, so I had to go on the internet to find some information and to talk to people, because in normal life they don't talk to me, because redhead people are scary for a lot of them. So I thought it's a good idea to go on the web and do something with it. And I absolutely love HTML5 and web standards, and especially encoding is a wonderful thing across browsers, because you never have issues like that. When I started as a web developer, when I still had my hair and I was young and pure and innocent, we didn't have any standard. We had like document all for Internet Explorer, and we had document layers for Netscape, and we had to write all of our code twice. Our career was mostly knowing how browsers mess up. That was how we actually built our career, and that's how we made sure that people hire us. And we said, this is not maintainable. We want to have standards. We want to have something to build against. And that's why I've been fighting for that for a long, long time. Yesterday, the day before yesterday, was Blue Beanie Day, when people celebrated the seminal book by Jeffrey Seltman that talked about building with web standards and developing with web standards. And we're quite there. It's quite amazing what you can do with them. And then, of course, we had the party pooper, which was Internet Explorer. Which was the browser that refused to get upgraded and refused to do the things that other browsers did. And I got really annoyed by that, and especially I got annoyed by it when people did not embrace HTML5 and all the new functionality we had in HTML5 with the excuse of saying, like, we have to support Internet Explorer. Because HTML5 and all the other standards are built backwards compatible. So you don't have to give the same experience to every browser out there. If you do give the same experience to every browser out there, you're actually delivering something terrible. You might as well deliver a JPEG and hope that looks the right way in every browser, but even that doesn't work. The idea of the web is that it adapts itself to the needs of the user at the time and the environment of the user at the time. So supporting Internet Explorer did not mean that you have to give it all the animations and all the cool stuff that you gave to Chrome or Firefox or other browsers. It just means that you gave it some HTML that worked. But people did not understand that, especially product managers love to go up to you and say, like, make it work in every browser the same way and do it fast and cheap. And you're like, I just go in my corner and cry now for half an hour. We then had Internet Explorer 11, which was actually a really okay browser. It had all the cool things that all the other browsers had, but nobody cared, because everybody who is actually a speaker at the circuit used these Macs and these kind of things, so we didn't even look at Internet Explorer 11. You know, it's like having a relationship where you get hurt once and then you don't want to go back, and you're like, I know you're still Internet Explorer, you know, there's IE6 evilness somewhere in there, I know you look pretty. But our messaging in Microsoft was kind of off. Instead of just saying, like, okay, we're a cool browser now, what we did was we banged on about that we're the browser who's most standard compliant. And by that, the W3C standards were only interesting for people who actually have to apply to a standard, like, you know, enterprise people that got these ISO 9000 certifications where every 5 years they can install new software and be happy, and whereas other people install things every week and show them what could be. Well, we were all like, oh, it's the strictest standards compliance, where most of the other ones pointed out that other browsers were innovating. They were doing cool new things all the time, and where is our innovation? And we did a lot of innovation as well, but we didn't bang the drum about it much. And this was kind of the second browser wars, where we got all these prefixes and things going on that only worked in one browser, where your websites came out like, oh, you need Chrome to look at that. You need Firefox to look at that. You need Opera to look at that. And you're like, this is not the web. You cannot tell end users which browser to use, because a lot of time they're fixed in their operating system and they're fixed in their environments. The other problem we did then was we had libraries. Libraries patched issues, like jQuery made the web much, much easier because you didn't need to know the IE6 problems, IE7, IE8, IE9 problems, and of course other browsers have problems as well. People just don't complain about it as much. And we used jQuery, we used MooTools, we used YUI, we used all these libraries to make ourselves as developers more efficient, and we put them out on the web for eternity, because it was much easier for us to do something in a week rather than 3 weeks, and we never have to upgrade these libraries anyways, right? Not so quite. And then we came up with Microsoft Edge, and we said, okay, we understand you don't like IE. It's fine. So what we do is we give you a brand new browser in Windows 10 that is an evergreen browser as well. So it does not need to upgrade with the operating system. You don't need to wait 5 years and install 12 different CDs to get a better browser. It is independent from the operating system, and it gets upgraded every time there's a new functionality, not like every 6 weeks or 4 weeks like other browsers. We just say, okay, we do something, we roll it out. It's the same across all form factors. So on mobile, on desktop, on tablet, on HoloLens, on IoT, on your cat, on your dog, in your car, wherever you want to run Windows 10, sooner or later this will happen, you can actually have the same browser. And that's a very important thing, because on Android, for example, there's a massive difference between the stock Android from Google and the Android that Samsung put on phones or Huawei put on phones and these kind of things. So we wanted to make sure it's the same everywhere. It's standards compliant, so it is a CSS3, HTML5, all the standards are supported in there. We got rid of all the stuff that Internet Explorer needed, like VML, attach event, browser modes, all the things that kids nowadays don't know about at all, and they don't need to know about at all. And it's comparable with other browsers. It's totally on par with all the other browsers that we have out there. So that was awesome. And then we encountered that people do user agent sniffing. User agent sniffing means if you're Safari, I give you a beautiful environment, and if you're Internet Explorer, I give you something that your users will hate you for. And you go on mobile devices and you find out that everything looks like Safari. Like, I love when I go to my Android phone, I get buttons that look like iOS 1. And you're like, wait, what? So people do read out user agent names and then make decisions on top of that. The problem with that is it's just unreliable. The main issue is that user agents are a pack of lies. They tell you, I can always fake something else. So I can go, for example, in my Firefox here, I've got the default user agent, and I can say I'm Internet Explorer 6 if I wanted to. And out of a sudden, your site will give me what I wanted to have. So what we needed to do to make Edge work is send it out there on the web, and to get the new content to fix bugs that are across browsers, we needed to say, hey, we're Chrome, or hey, we're Safari. So we sent the browser out with different user agents, then we looked at websites, and then we started fixing them in the new browser. So user agent sniffing, bad idea, don't do that. Then, of course, we had experimental features using prefixes. The big thing there was CSS gradients, animations, and people used WebKit none. So form fields in WebKit, you can actually take all the styling off, and then you can't start styling them. But that's only a WebKit prefix thing. It's not a standard. So when people use that, Internet Explorer and Firefox and Chrome and Edge just showed unstyled form elements, which is not necessarily an issue, but for example, we found a dating site where it had an icon of female and male in Safari, and it had an empty and full radio box in all the other browsers. So when you sign up for a dating site, maybe you want to be adventurous, but it's not necessarily the right thing to do. So we had to start implementing all these features because people relied on them. And there's a big thing in there called experimental. Experiments is when things explode, when things burn, when people get hurt. And still people relied on that in production. So we had to put a lot of WebKit prefixes in Microsoft Edge to not break the web. Because the last thing you can do as a browser maker is break the web. Because no matter who's at fault, developers will always say it's the browser. So that was a bad thing as well. Then we have outdated libraries. We put jQuery in there 5 years ago to fix things, and that jQuery had user agent sniffing in there and WebKit prefixes. So a lot of these errors, mistakes that we make over the years keep staying alive because we put it in some library, don't even know what's going on there. There's a lot of evaling going on in older versions of MooTools and older versions of for example, prototype, so a lot of security issues as well. So people just use libraries and don't upgrade them anymore. And that's a big, big problem for us because we had to be compatible with that as well. For example, MooTools has an array contains function, and the new version of JavaScript has an array contains function. So we couldn't override the MooTools one because that broke a lot of websites out there. So we had to rename it in the standard because developers don't take things out of the web. So that was bad. And then we had broken implementations becoming de facto standards. Like when the standard said, this is how something is supposed to work, and both Chrome and Firefox did it differently, we were asked to do it differently as well, although it's not the standard. So what do we do? In essence, we said, like, OK, it's a de facto standard. We have to not break the web. So we supported the standard, and we supported the wrong implementation of other browsers, which is annoying to do. But again, we cannot break the web, and no browser should be. So then we released the new Edge after going through all these tests and all these things. We also sent the Bing crawler out, which is a search engine. You can Google for that in case you don't know it. We instrumented on top of that one and indexed like trillions of websites and found out all the mistakes there. So then we had a browser that was evergreen, same across form factors, standards compliant, and compatible with other browsers on standards and de facto standards. So if you don't care about Microsoft Edge, good. You don't have to care about it. The whole idea of that browser is to be very, very compatible with the web right now because we wanted you to stop having to think about those Microsoft guys and their browser because, yeah, 10 years is enough. So we managed, Whoever phone is that has to sing later on for everybody. So we built a forgiving browser that is there, and it's a wonderful browser because you don't have to test for it. And that's what I really, really like about it. And many people are like, oh, when can I get Edge for my iPhone? When can I get Edge for my OS X? You won't, but you don't need to. The whole idea in my wonderful world of like the unwashed open source hippie is that in the end, I should write towards standards, not for browsers. Browsers should compete on the interface, the features that end users use that we as developers don't even know because we're keyboard users. This is what browsers should compete on, but the machinery, the things under the hood should be the same in every browser. So that's a good thing as well. And the great thing with that is that lots of forgotten standards are now available. So if you now go to caniuse.com, which is a great website that shows you what all the things are doing, so you can go caniuse.com and you say, for example, download attribute, which was almost impossible to use in Internet Explorer. And if I look at that now, and now I say, like, okay, in Edge we got it in 13 and 14, we got it in Firefox, we got it in Chrome, we don't have it in Safari. Well, fair enough. Opera, and then we have it in all the others. So look through caniuse.com and find a lot of things that you thought was not possible to use, but is now possible to use. And it's so much fun doing that. This whole presentation thing is like two event handlers. I've got no libraries in there. I'm just using animations and the end animation events to actually get to the next slide and so on and so forth. It's also local storage. All the things that you thought were broken are now available to you because Internet Explorer is dead. JavaScript has moved on to become ES6. ES6 is the current version of JavaScript. And this is not a fever dream. This is not look what's coming next. This is a ratified standard by the ECMA consortium. And it's been ratified in June, so we now have JavaScript that is much more memory aware, that is much more organized. So you have classes, you have block level scoping, you've got things like constants, which allow you to actually write code that tells you at the beginning of your script that this thing will never change again. So you don't have to worry about it, and you can have a predictive kind of coding. So if you come from other languages like C#, Java, these kind of things, JavaScript becomes much more interesting for you out of a sudden because you got all the syntactic sugar that you always wanted to have. And if you used libraries like Lodash and jQuery and these kind of things, a lot of these short notations in ES6 allow you to write that one as well. The benefit of that one is that it allows us to write larger applications in ES6, in JavaScript, without running into the problems of scaling of JavaScript we did in the past. So you have proper OO in there, you have module loading, you have required loading, these kind of things that we used libraries for in the past. The good thing about ES6 as well is that it's encouraging support right now. If you go to this Kangax website, which shows you the support of ES6 currently in all the browsers, everything that's green is good. Everything that's red is not good, except when it's hair, then it's amazing. And you got like all the different pre-compilers here. You've got desktop browsers. And you can see a lot of green going on there. And it's pretty beautiful to see the percentages, like that you have like 84% on Edge 13. You've got 71% on Firefox. Chrome is at play. Safari 9 is really, really good as well. Safari was always the problem of supporting these kind of things, but it's there. So go back to this list as well from time to time and see the numbers going out and be happy. Maybe it's just me, but I'm sad. Transpilers allow you to give ES6 to older environments. So if you want to have ES6, but you say like, oh, I got to support Internet Explorer 9, oh, I got to support old Android devices, transpilers like Babel.js give you a conversion from ES6 into ES5. For example, this one, the one that I saw earlier with the fat arrow going from JavaScript to ES6, that is valid ES6. But in ES5, it would look like this, function JavaScript return ES6. So that was converted by Babel.js, by Babel for me. I don't have to do that. I don't have to do it myself. You can use Babel in the browser. You can do it in a build script. You can use it in editors. It's used by Facebook. It's used by most of the other people. Facebook actually hired the guy who wrote Babel.js. So it's a great tool to get used to the new JavaScript out there without having to worry about support in the older browsers. The issue, of course, is that it's a bit strict about it, so it converts everything into ES5. So even if the browser supports ES6, it doesn't get it, which is kind of unfair. So the other solution for that one is to use supersets. TypeScript language is a Java is a superset language of JavaScript that allows you to write the JavaScript of tomorrow right now, and it converts it under the hood into JavaScript. What it does as well, it tests if the browser supports ES6 and converts it into ES6, or if it converts it into ES5. So it's much cleverer than transpilers about it, or less strict or less pragmatic about it, because it has to do some feature testing under the hood. TypeScript was originally done by Microsoft as well, but is now embraced by Google for Angular 2, for example. And it not only allows you to use the syntax and the syntactic sugar of ES6, but it also gives you type safety, which JavaScript still doesn't have. So it allows you to write things that are less memory consuming, because you know a variable is an integer and doesn't become a string later, or an array, or a boat, or an elephant, like JavaScript allows you to do. So that's superset, and that's a superpower that's quite wonderful. Developer tools are ridiculously good. People always keep complaining that native has much better developer tooling, but almost every browser, you can just right-click something and you can start inspecting it. This is Firefox here now. And you got these really, really cool tools in there where you can debug your website, you have like step-by-step debugging in JavaScript, you got style editors, you got 3D debugging even, all these kind of things. Almost every browser is a developer tool right now. And this is something that when I started as a web developer, I might have killed for, but nobody ever mentioned it. And all of them are good. Like Chrome developer tools are incredible. Safari tools are okay. Firefox tools are great. I worked on those for a while. F12 developer tools in Edge and in Internet Explorer are getting places as well. So if you have feedback for browsers out there, please use these tools and understand what you can do with them. There's so much insight into what the browser does in terms of rendering, in terms of reflows, in terms of memory consumption. There's really no excuse anymore to build slow websites, because browsers tell you what you're doing wrong once you spend the time and understanding what they're doing. We've got kick-ass editors and debuggers, like Atom, Sublime Text, all these cool editors out there that are debuggers themselves. So you don't even need to get into the browser to test your JavaScript. You can do a step-by-step debugging in the developer tools themselves and in the editors themselves. And John is going to show more of these things. I wrote this thing yesterday night in Visual Studio Code. And it's just amazing what you can do with these kind of things. You don't have to type a lot of code anymore. It automates things for you. So for example, I say li tab, and then I say span.icon and tab, and it creates my HTML for me while I'm doing it. It debugs my JavaScript while I'm doing it. What I really found cool as well is the color picker yesterday. I didn't even know we had that. So if I start typing a red here, for example, it gives me all the possible colors, and I don't even need to know the name of these colors. It just does it for me in a visual way. And that allows people to start programming without being an amazing programmer, and I think that's a very important thing to get people to start nowadays. We have remote debugging services and tools. Varlon.js is one thing we just released as open source. But there's also, most developer tools allow you to connect to a mobile device. There's also services like BrowserStorm and BrowserLink and these kind of things that may allow you to connect to devices somewhere else on the planet and see your site on that. I mean, how cool is that? We use the internet to develop rather than develop for the internet. And that's something that in the past I would have just dreamed of as well. So there's sessions on that later on as well. We've got open communication channels. So if you think Microsoft should do more things, which please do, there's a great thing called status.modern.ie. That one shows you the status of the current browser. You also have remote.modern.ie, and you got user.voice.modern.ie, so I'm opening all of those right now. What user voice is allows you to give feedback to the browser and say like, okay, I saw this, I want to have that one right now. So in this case, you want to have OGV and OGG video audio format on Microsoft Edge. 53 people voted that up, and now it's under review. Request idle callback, and so on and so forth. So if you want something, please go there. Don't go to Twitter and complain that we don't have it, because that just means there's a pitchfork, a storm of people shouting at us, and it's just noise. This is where the team goes to say, okay, so many people wanted that, let's put it into the browser. Statusmodern.ie is statusmodern.ie shows you the status that's currently happening, what is implemented. it's under consideration, it's in development, or it's supported. And it also shows you which browser is supported. So this is not only a thing for Edge, but it shows you all the other browsers as well. So we're sending data back and forth from caniuse.com. So we're helping them out, they're helping us out. So you find out what's going on there. So if you want to play with new features, make sure that you turn on the that you want to have all of them supported by other browsers and start playing with them. So instead of just checking here on Chrome, just check on Edge, check all the things, and then you find new things that you play with. And it's just so much fun to do that nowadays. If you want to try out Edge without having a Mac, there's a remote debugging tool which creates a Windows 10 edition in Azure for you with Edge on it. So it's great for testing something quickly. And of course, it's broken right now on my computer, so I can't show it. Trust me, it's magic. So if you have complaints about the browser, MS Edge Dev on Twitter is a very good way to contact us. And please participate. Every single browser, except for one by a certain fruit company, has open channels where people can communicate with them. Every browser has a lot of stuff on GitHub. Every browser allows you to give to fork a lot of their tools and play with them and put things in there. So don't think that you have to wait for browser makers to do magic, because we don't. We're just developers as well, and we need you to give us feedback what you want to have supported and what you want to use in your products. So please participate and let your voice be heard. It's not that you do, we're always like, oh, I don't matter. We all matter. You all have something cool to show. And if you work for a really boring company and you have to do some terrible things and you fix those terrible things, please tell us. I have enough information from the cool kids in the Silicon Valley that tell me every 2 minutes what they're doing. I'd rather know from people that work in banks, in insurance companies, that have to build these interfaces that we hate to use every single day and found a way to make them slightly better. This is what I want you to think about. Make the whole web better and not only the innovation of the web out there. I always love it when you see these interfaces that take 7 steps for it could be a single drag and drop, and then people start defending them. I call it the Stockholm syndrome of interfaces. If you show people a terrible interface long enough, they start defending it because they're like, I can't be stupid and do that every day. This must be the right thing to use, right? So participation is very welcome. Please do something about this. And assume that the future is bright. There's some wonderful stuff coming. There's offline web solutions. I mean, we already have app cache. We have all kind of local storage. Service worker is coming across browsers. Device capability access. You can access all kind of cool things on mobile devices now in JavaScript. And that was always a big issue because Safari said no, but now Safari says yes as well. We have componentization and modularization in ES6, and we have a simplification due to convenience methods and more capable browsers. Browsers do not suck any longer. Browsers are really good, so take a look at what you have out there on the web and remove all the things you had to put in there to support browsers that are dead. Internet Explorer 6 is retired. It is in the park with other old browsers feeding the ducks. Don't try to actually drag it into the room anymore and make it do things. It has done its duty. It shouldn't do it any longer. Stop thinking in browsers and start thinking in opportunities. Stop thinking, oh, this browser doesn't do that. So what? Do an if statement around the thing and give it to the browsers that have that support. Think about what you can do with the next iteration of technologies, not what you have to support with the 10-year-old technology. It's time we move the web forward. Let's clean up this mess and make way for the future. Get rid of all code that is not necessary any longer. And it's such a good feeling to delete old code because we never get paid for that. You know, our managers never say like, oh, how about you take a week off and clean up all the stuff that you had to rush the last 6 months? Sadly enough, not going to happen. But they don't know what we're doing. So basically just do your normal job really quickly and then spend 2 hours cleaning up stuff. It feels really, really good to delete old crap. There's a great tool called Static Scan, which allows you to run a website through it, and it shows you if you do user testing, if user agent testing, if you do all kind of stuff. So let's take a look at my site here, because I know it's going to be bad, and I'm not insulting anybody if I do. So it scans for the issues that this website has, and then it tells me what can be improved. And it says, for example, I'm really, really good with modern web interoperability. Who knew? But cross-browser experience, there are some issues in there. So for example, I don't have responsive web design, which I do, so that's weird. But it explains to me what I can do better. Compressed content I'm doing. I'm not doing pre-render and pre-fetch, but it tells me when I click on that why this is an important thing and what I can do. So I'm doing that a lot with banks and other people right now. I run their website through these scanners and give them all the information how they can make their sites better. And I think that's more for the open web than just coming up with yet another framework, yet another library for people to use and discard in 2 weeks' time because the next one is the cool thing that we want to use. And with that, I think I'm out of time. Thanks very much, and have a great day today. I'll be around all day. You can't shut me up anyways. I also have a book to give away, which we're going to do at the end of the day, I guess. So you all have to wait for that.
Oh, I don't need that.
Okay.
Nothing scares me.
So much power.
This is not my phone. If you are speaking, it's yes. Yeah? That was true. I was speaking. I was not amplified. He was correct on that. Hello. Who here was here last year at the webcam thing? We had so much fun. Really, when they asked us to come back, we could not wait to come back. We were so excited about it. So I have a half hour to cover a ton of stuff. I don't know if I'm presenting, which is gonna. So I'm plugged into the same one that he was on before. Oh yeah.
Yep.
Duplicate. Thank you. It's totally gonna work. Otherwise, I'll just have to sing to you. And I am a good singer. I'm not a good singer. All right, let me try one more time. I will unshare and reshare. So, oh, I wonder if it's doing the. It takes a while. Should I unplug it and replug it? I have another thing that I can use too. I have an HDMI too, if that's.
You see now why standards matter?
Live demo, live demo.
Do you have an HDMI?
Maybe I have another. I have another.
Huh?
Yeah, try this one.
Oh, wait, we got something?
This is from Lenovo.
Oh. Something's happening.
Hey.
Woo! All right, it's a great success. It's all downhill from here. All right, yes. Hello. So I'm going to be talking about the dev tools and platforms. This picture here is actually out of date, so I've updated it here. I actually worked, we're doing a talk later today about the My Mustache site that I worked on. I just killed the screen somehow. So let me unplug and replug. I'm just going to give up, I think. So I'm going to be talking about the dev platform and tools, and I want to talk to you about a few things with that. So, yeah, it's worth thinking.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
All right. So, I have another one.
John, use
this. This one, he says, is the one.
The one.
We trust you.
I'm going to start over. You guys are going to have to hear my joke all over.
This is the one.
Oh, I made the noise.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
Interoperability.
See if the resolution would the hearts or
maybe okay. Resolution. Oh, is it okay. Low resolution?
Everybody count how many engineers do you need to fix one laptop? I also love the fact that we're in the Microsoft office and the Microsoft machine does not connect.
It's drawn on.
There are no securities out there. Always write code that assumes everything goes wrong. Always be prepared as a professional speaker that your slides might not work. So let's make a quick poll. Who here is a web developer or like a front-end developer?
I don't know how it works.
Something flashed.
Oh, yeah. Product manager?
1024. Yeah. Woo, okay.
Light people?
All right.
Yeah?
Visual designers?
Duplicate.
Database. Wow, cool. Lawyers. Okay. I'll be back once you mess up.
Yes, please. Just stay right there. Don't go far. All right, so I'm going to be talking about stuff. I was late. I had very little time anyways, so I didn't have enough time for funny pictures. This is the only funny picture I've got, so I'm going to have to make that one last. So I'm going to be talking about three different things in the remaining 6 minutes that I have. So I want to talk about currently, for your current existing applications, we're always talking about, hey, here's some new stuff we just built. I think it can be a little confusing because we don't put it in the context of the applications you're building today. So I want to point out, here's some stuff that you can use today on your applications you're building today, okay? I want to point out some top web dev features that you may not know about that are in Visual Studio, that are in the existing versions we've shipped, that some that are 2 days, shipped 2 days ago. And then I want to talk about the kind of platform future and where we're going with ASP.NET 5. So, let's dig right in. Visual Studio 2015. So here's, you don't have to memorize all of this. This won't be on the test, but I just wanted to give kind of an overview. There are rapid releases. So who here is using Visual Studio 2015? Okay, good. So who here is like just as soon as the updates come out, they're using them? Pretty much, yeah. That's kind of what we want you to do. So the idea is we want you to trust that the updates are not going to break you. So we really do work hard to make sure that, you know, in the past, it used to be something where you had to worry about, like, okay, we need to wait and test everything before we update to the newest update of Visual Studio. And the idea really is that we're shipping them all the time. So we just shipped Visual Studio 2015 in July, and on November 30th, we just shipped 2015.1. So we're shipping very rapidly, and part of the reason for that is that the web moves quickly. And we don't want you to be building with tools that are 2 years old. We need you to be building with tools that are up to date. Okay, so let's look at some web dev features. And I want to do that by starting with ASP.NET 4.6. So who here is building applications using web forms? Any version of web forms? And don't do this. You can put them up. All right, I know you're doing it. That's cool, right? If you've got a good working app and it's paid off for you and it's continuing to work, We want to make it easy for you to keep doing that. We want to make it easy for you to develop those applications, to take advantage of modern web standards, et cetera. So here's an example of some things that we have added in just recently since the Visual Studio 2015 release in July. So out of people that are using web forms, who is using model binding? I am surprised to see. I saw one hand, two hands, three hands. That's great, actually. Four hands. That makes me really happy. Usually when I talk about this, nobody's using model binding. If you're using web forms, you can ignore everything else that I say and just write down on a piece of paper, learn model binding, because it's really important, okay? So model binding really helps you clean up your code. It also helps you to take advantage of MVC in a web forms application or web API. So you can take your web forms application and you can start building APIs and you can start building single page app things. So you can really modernize web forms app. Well, in 2015 that shipped in July, we added async model binding. And here's some other things that we added. HTTP2 support, I got a slide for that in a bit. And all the web tools, so you always see people show off NPM, Grunt, Gulp, Bower, all that stuff, and you'll only see that in the context of ASP.NET 5 solutions. But in fact, you can use it on anything. So you could use it in a PHP app, you could use it in a web forms app, right? So all these tools are Visual Studio specific. HTTP2 support, I want to dig into that just a second, because this is something that can give you big performance boosts in any application. You can turn it on literally, I think it's just a couple of lines of code in a web forms app. So here's an example of a web forms application that has multiple images. So we're downloading all these images, and it's waiting as it's downloading all the images, because it can't pull them all down. It can't optimize that, right? So just turning on HTTP2 support, watch that in the network, right? So that's kind of the idea of how much you can optimize something literally turning on a switch, okay? Let's talk editor features. So NPM integration. Now, I gotta hammer this in a little bit more. Whoops, what on earth just happened there? I do not wanna start that program. Let's go back here. Nice, huh? Okay, so this is what I wanted to do. Can anyone tell me which version of MVC I'm using here? It's a trick question. This is web forms. I just got it. So this is default.aspx, right? This is a web forms app. So I just want to make sure that everyone's getting that. This works for MVC 4, this works for MVC 5, this works for web forms, et cetera. So NPM, you can start using NPM today. So this has things in there where you can start, when you bring in an NPM package, you get statement, you get completion of which package is the newest one, right? And I don't know if you're, I still get mixed up by this syntax here. I'm not sure which one it is. Is it a tilde or do I want the caret, et cetera? So that will actually, when you mouse over it, it'll tell you what that means. Bower. So we're recommending, in the past, we had you bring in JavaScript packages using NuGet. And we're recommending that you use NPM and Bower going forward. And the reason for that is just that's where the packages are. So when these new packages come out, we don't want you to have to wait until someone pushes them out to NuGet. We want you to use them the day they're released. And the place you can get them is on Bower. So we've got great Bower support, and I'll show you a little bit more about that in a second, a new improvement we've made. But in Bower, literally in here, I could type comma, jQuery, colon, it'll autocomplete the version number, and when I hit enter, it'll restore the package. So everything's just right there and kept up to date for me. One nice thing with this, of course, is that I can commit this to source control. This is my bower.json file, and that's going to be kept up to date in source control, right, with all my packages. Grunt and Gulp. So who here is using Grunt and or Gulp? Okay. Who here has no idea what Grunt or Gulp are? Okay. So what Grunt and Gulp become more useful when you're doing a lot of stuff on the client side, where you're pulling down packages, and then you need to do things like run front-end tests, or you need to minify your JavaScript, or you need to copy your files down. Maybe you've pulled down a package from Bower and it's got a lot of different, you know, sample code and you know, maybe a PDF or something. I've seen Bower packages that are multiple megabytes. Sometimes you don't want that in your shipping version of your application. So you can use Gulp and Grunt to copy files. So you can say, download my Bower packages outside of my application, copy just these files that are minified into my release, right? So this is kind of a way that you can set that up. One nice thing that we've got for you, in addition to having IntelliSense and kind of understanding what those packages do, you also have a Task Runner Explorer. So you can hook up things. So you can say, for instance, I want to run my clean task on build. So every time I run build, it's going to do a clean, it's going to minify, and it's going to copy my files, right? So that integrates in with Visual Studio. Every time I build and run, it's automatically going to run those tasks for me. And finally, the JSON editor. There's a lot, because we're doing things with Bower and NPM, and also the new project file for ASP.NET 5 is JSON, there's a lot of JSON files that you're editing. So the JSON editor now has some pretty smart IntelliSense for it. So there's this drop-down at the top, and it goes out to Schema Store, which is an open source repository of JSON schemas. And here I pick Swagger. So this is Swagger's an API definition format. So I pick Swagger, and then I started typing monkey colon spaghetti. And right away it says, wait a minute, that is not appropriate, right? And as I mouse over name, it'll tell me what that is. What is it required? What does it mean? And finally, there's just a lot of great things we continue to add to the HTML editor. The reason I'm pointing this out is because I want you to remember that Visual Studio is not just a great editor for editing C#. It's not just an editor for editing your back-end server-side code. It's also a great editor for editing your front-end code. So for instance, we can detect things like if you go in and start typing a Bootstrap class for a button, but you don't have the default. So if you type button-default, but you don't put in button, am I echoing? I'm kind of echoing. Then it'll warn you. It'll say, hey, wait a minute, you need to also put in that base class. Who here has actually done that and spent like a half an hour trying to figure out why their Bootstrap button? Yep. So this will detect that for you. And finally, just tons of stuff. We keep adding things to the JavaScript editor as well. So that was Visual Studio 2015, shipped in July. So we could have taken it easy, but we thought, well, let's keep working. So I didn't do any of this stuff. I just get to talk about it. But Visual Studio 2015 Update 1 was just released on November 30th. So tons of different stuff. One really cool thing, I think, is that they set up TextMate support. So TextMate bundles is a way that the TextMate editor pulls in different languages and snippets. So by setting that support up, they pulled in IntelliSense and snippets for Go, Java, Perl, R, and a bunch of other languages. And I actually was hacking around trying to turn on different languages. You can kind of go in and search through and look for TM bundle files on your computer after installing this, and you can turn those on. A lot of other features in here, C# REPL, so you can command line REPL using C# and stuff. I don't have time to talk about all this stuff. I'm focusing just on web features, but here's a link for you where you can go and find more, and I'll have that link at the end of the talk as well. All right, so 2015 update one. Here's some features I want to point out. So Bootstrap snippets is, I talked to you a little bit about some of that Bootstrap IntelliSense that it shows you. We've continued to build on that. The Bower package manager made that smarter, and then there's this new web extension pack. So I've talked way too much and started up Visual Studio 2013 once, but I have not actually done any coding, so let's actually do some coding. So I'll shut that down. Okay, so here I've got file, new project. First thing I want to show you is some of the kind of IntelliSense that we've got for things. So for instance, if I go in here and I want to look at my Bower packages. Well, number one, where are my Bower packages? I don't see bower.json. So I can actually go in, and if I click on this icon here, then it shows all that stuff, right? So let's click on show all files. It totally should show them. There it is. Okay. So not sure why it's not showing it. All right, we'll skip over that.
Do you need to open the folder?
I shouldn't need to, actually. I did this just before. Let's see. There it is, Bower. That might have been it. So here's that Bower, and I can go in and I can start typing in this. And this is where I can type something like comma, and then, you know, D3. Right, and then this will go and it'll tell me what is the latest package version. So that's kind of neat. I wanted to show also the Bootstrap additional support we've added in. So here, if I go into one of my views, and let's say in my index view, I wanted to put in some additional kind of neat Bootstrap stuff. So now if I go to, does anyone remember the toolbox? I've not used the toolbox in a very long time, but it's still there. And it's actually gotten a little more useful. What I like about this is that it's there, it's being used, but it's not doing some kind of weird control editor sort of thing. It just inserts some HTML for me, but it makes it a lot easier. So say, for instance, I wanted to put in something like a drop-down split button, right? So I can just take that, drag it over, and now I've got a Bootstrap drop-down split button. I just save 10 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever going out and looking up what to do for that, right? So Bower, I showed you the Bower.json. Let's look a little bit more at the additional Bower support. So now if I go in and I say manage Bower packages, we've added in kind of a new Bower experience. So here I can go out and I can browse things. So these are Bower packages I currently have installed. And I can also go to browse and I could say I would like, you know, require. And I think I actually installed require earlier, but so there I could go and uninstall it. So let's try. When I uninstall it, what's nice about this is that it actually keeps it in sync. So it's going to go and update that Bower.json file. Right? So that's kind of neat. One other thing I wanted to show you is this web extension pack. So this is a new thing. Mads Christensen, who here has used VS Web Essentials? Okay, Web Essentials is really cool, and then there's a bunch of other small little extensions that Mads has continued to build. There's also some great ones that are just out there on the web that he said, you know what, we should make people aware of these. And so there's this new I'll just bring it up. Web extension pack. When you install this web extension pack, it pulls down Web Essentials and then a few other ones as well. So that's, right, web extension pack. So I just recommend, it's a free extension, works on any version, you know, any edition of Visual Studio 2015. So get the web extension pack. It's basically VS Web Essentials and then some. Okay, so that's it for those quick features. Things I don't have time to show you, but I'm really excited about. As a web developer working in Visual Studio, be sure to check out Node Tools for Visual Studio. So we just shipped Node Tools for Visual Studio 1.1. Has great support for things like breakpoints or, you know, IntelliSense. So it really kind of understands your code and does some smart things with it. Also integrates well with TypeScript, new TypeScript 1.7 just released, and it has some great integration with that. So this can take, if you're doing Node development along with other things on Visual Studio, if you have Visual Studio installed and you're doing Node development, you can use all those things you're used to as far as debugging, et cetera. And we also ship Python, so here's Python tools for Visual Studio, built by the same kind of team that works on Node tools for Visual Studio, so some great stuff. That's Visual Studio. Let's switch over and talk about Visual Studio Code super quick. So some neat things that just ship with Visual Studio Code. Well, first, let's talk about what Visual Studio Code is. So Visual Studio, you know, the whole Visual Studio fits over here. It's a full IDE. The idea there is you're going to be working in a project for a while. You really want to understand your code. You want your editor to do quite a bit for you. But sometimes I'll find myself popping open Notepad because I just want to make a quick edit to some HTML or some JavaScript or something, right? So that is okay, but it's not really that smart. Like, for instance, it doesn't understand my code. Even some of the editors out there, like Sublime or Atom, can go through and they'll kind of do IntelliSense, but not completely, because they don't understand the code. So, for instance, if I start typing controller in my home controller, it's going to just autocomplete with anything that starts with the word controller. So what I'd like better is something that actually can understand my code a little more. So that's where Visual Studio Code fits in. So the idea is that you get kind of the advantages of a lightweight editor, starts up really quick. You know, it's free, by the way, so that's a nice thing. And it's cross-platform, so that's nice. You can take it with you wherever you go. But it's, so you get kind of this kind of lightweight editor experience, but it has a little bit more intelligence about your code. So the idea kind of where it fits in has great, it works really well with Git. So it can understand if you're working in a Git repo and you start making changes, it'll show you kind of what's changed and kind of what your updates are that to check in and stuff. So it was built off of the Visual Studio Online Monaco and has tons of other features that I'm not going to point out. And here's some cool stuff I'm going to tell you about. So we just announced Visual Studio Code Beta, and it ships with extensions. So these extensions are really cool. You can get them online. There's a gallery for it, and you can also install them inside Visual Studio Code. So inside Visual Studio Code, if I say ext install, and then it's going to go out to that extension gallery, and it's going to get a list of the different extensions that are available. So here I'll do, it's Control P. Right, and there's tons of great extensions already out there. So there's a lot of great stuff available. So I've gone and installed some earlier, including some different themes and stuff. I kind of got to rip past that real quick, but I encourage you to kind of play with this. There's some great stuff in there. Another neat thing is Visual Studio Code is open source. So this screenshot I grabbed the other day, there's 8,200 stars of it and 870 forks, and this is just in a few days. So it's very very popular project out on GitHub. So that's pretty cool. So that's Visual Studio Code. And then I'm going to spend just a couple of minutes talking about ASP.NET 5. And I've got a whole talk on this later today, so I really just want to talk mostly about where ASP.NET 5 fits in. So I've got a talk on this, and there's at least two other talks on ASP.NET 5 kind of in general later. There's a talk right after this talking about ASP.NET 5 running on some different platforms. Cross-platform support, which is really cool. And then there's also a talk later today on web API and building web API apps with ASP.NET 5. So that's neat. So here's kind of where ASP.NET 5 fits in. We've got currently with what we shipped in July, so ASP.NET 4.6 running on the full .NET framework. So this is kind of the traditional ASP.NET stack that you've been used to for a while. And it runs great on Windows, right? And only on Windows. So the easy, kind of simple, you know, don't scare yourself way to look at ASP.NET 5 is it can do all those things. So you can run ASP.NET 5 on this exact same stack, on Visual Studio 2015, no changes, right? So that's kind of the simple, you know, hey, new version of ASP.NET. But we've also introduced this .NET Core 5. .NET Core 5 is open source and cross-platform. It also enables you to kind of, because it runs on these just specific core libraries, it enables you to say, I would only like to, like, you can basically say, I would like this application to run on this specific version of .NET Core. And so it kind of brings all its dependencies with it. So you can actually take an application, copy it onto a USB stick, bring it over to a Mac, Linux, Windows machine with nothing installed, pop the USB stick in and run your website, right? So here is, you know, to be clear, this is what is released. ASP.NET 5 is not released. It's an RC stage, which means it has a go-live license. We encourage you to use it, but it's not the final release. Okay, we're expecting the final release to be quarter one 2016. So we do encourage you to use it. You should just expect that there are going to be some changes and it's not completely done. And this is what's OSS. So portions of ASP.NET 4.6 are open source. This entire stack for ASP.NET 5 down to the compilers and the server are open source. So that's pretty cool. So I kind of want to finish up talking about ASP.NET 5 just by focusing on why we did it. Because this is a very common question. Like, why did you complicate things? Kind of used to ASP.NET as it is. So these are some of the things. I'm going to go into all this stuff in more detail later today. But some of the things are to allow you to work the same way you do on other modern web platforms like Node, where you can just pick and choose different portions and optimize for your specific application. Open source, important to a lot of people. Cross-platform, so the flexibility. And I talk to a lot of CIOs and you know, people, architects at companies, and they'll say, we're not planning actually on running, we're planning on staying on Windows, but we just want to know that we could move if we needed to. That's a valid concern. So that's something that's nice. ASP.NET in general in the past really needed Visual Studio. It's pretty hard to build on anything other than Visual Studio. Going forward, we want it to make it so that it can run great in any editor, including Visual Studio Code, of course. One that's just starting to kind of come up more now is fast. So we really have optimized ASP.NET 5 to be fast because we allow you to pick and choose just what you need. So here's kind of some benchmarks we've been working with. So this is an ASP.NET 4.6 application. This is running just a plain text benchmark. So they have a full benchmarking lab in the ASP.NET team room. And the goal is not to, it's not for marketing, it's not to prove they're fast or anything like that. The goal is to make sure that they're making ASP.NET 5 as good as it can be. So these are numbers they're working with. Okay, so they're saying 57,000 requests per second, plain text, which is pretty darn fast. That's actually really fast. Comparing just with static files from IIS, static file not doing anything, right? Getting a couple hundred thousand, 200,000, almost 300,000. And then comparing with Node, with pipelining, we can get up to 173,000 requests per second. All right? So what they're currently working with ASP.NET 5, plain text, 743,000 requests per second. So significantly faster, right? So, and now this is just for plain text. And this is, I'm not like selling you go buy it because of these numbers, but this is kind of why we're doing this, right? This really does allow you to say, for my application, I want it to just be a really fast socket server, or I want it to be a full website, but I want it to be really quick at what it does. This is an example of the kind of benefit you can get from that. So, and then to kind of sum up, it's all about the options. If you've got existing ASP.NET 4.6 applications, if you've got web forms apps, if you've got ASP.NET MVC 5 apps, that's great. We're just shipping tons of features. I just showed you tons of features that you can use. So that's great. We want to continue to support you. Don't want you to be worried that, hey, oh no, you know, this guy's falling. So that stuff's good. If you need some of these modern features, like, for instance, if you need side-by-side, if you need cross-platform, if you need to run just subsets of the .NET framework, et cetera, then you can use these as well. So it's all about which kind of options you want. All right. And we just announced Visual Studio Dev Essentials. This is really cool to be aware of. You can find more about that at visualstudio.com. So that was announced at the Connect event. So here's kind of a wrap-up of some slides before I pass over to Matt. I don't know if you want to take a picture of this or whatever, but some kind of main things to be aware of. Get.asp.net or just the ASP.net site will direct you to different things for getting ASP.net. ASP.net 5 documents are at docs.asp.net. And then I just kind of grabbed a bunch of the release blog posts, tons of blog posts about what's in Visual Studio 2015. That's it. Ready to pass over to Matt here. Thank you.
Hello. Hello. Okay. Oh.
Good luck.
É, agora a gente leva 2 horas para ligar o meu computador.
Show off.
Já está uma equipa de mecânicos em posto.
Tá. Muito bem. Então vamos lá. Bom, eu vou falar um pouco mais do que é possível construir com os serviços que nós temos na nuvem e com Azure em geral. Em março, abril desse ano, uma das coisas que o meu time, eu e o John, nós trabalhamos no mesmo time, uma das coisas que nós temos como responsabilidade é criar as demonstrações, os exemplos que são apresentados na abertura do Build, evento Build da Microsoft, quando chegam os executivos ali e começam a mostrar, olha, veja que legal, essa nova tecnologia, como ela funciona. O John e eu e nossos colegas estamos lá atrás rezando, pelo amor de Deus, funciona, não quebra, porque é o nosso trabalho. E nesse último evento Build, nós criamos um site nós participamos na criação de um site com o time de Machine Learning da Microsoft, e esse site é o howold.net. Então, na verdade, a ideia foi deles, nós fizemos muito pouco, mas nós participamos do design, da discussão do site, e a ideia do site é você faz um upload da sua foto e ele diz o quanto ele acha que a sua idade parece ser pela foto, né? Usando Machine Learning. E esse site foi feito em 2 semanas por um grupo de, foi o quê? 4 pessoas, talvez. E o objetivo era mostrar as APIs de Machine Learning que nós estávamos lançando e a plataforma de dados, de como analisar os dados em tempo real, como fazer analytics desses dados, como tirar relatórios, etc. A ideia era, olha, a gente vai fazer a abertura do Build, vai mostrar o site, todo mundo vai brincar um pouquinho e acabou o evento, a gente vai tirar o site do ar e acabou, né? Então tá bom. Colocamos o site no ar e, de repente, nós começamos a olhar os números, né, de acesso do site. E começou a ter assim, milhares e milhares e milhares de acessos e o site crescendo e a gente olhando aquilo e falando, o que você fez? Você quebrou alguma coisa? O que está acontecendo aqui? Não é possível. E aí a gente começou a ver todos os sites de notícias, de blog, falando, olha, o howold.net, PC World, Forbes, celebridades brincando com sites, as pessoas usando com filmes, pessoal brincando, começaram a usar com todos, né, a diferença de idade, filmes diferentes, começaram até a avaliar a idade de zumbi. Foi muito divertido. Aí a Ellen, que é famosa, começou a brincar, falou que o site era horrível porque errava a idade, mas ela estava feliz porque falava que ela tinha 27 anos, então tudo bem. Empresas começaram a usar. Isso foi fantástico. Começaram a fazer propaganda com o site do Howold. Foi muito divertido isso, né? De repente, o que está acontecendo? E esse é o Joseph Sirosh. Joseph Sirosh, ele é o vice-presidente da nossa plataforma de dados. Ele é o dono de tudo do Azure que tem a ver com dados. Então, Machine Learning, toda a parte de Analytics, Stream Analytics, tudo isso fica com ele. E muito recentemente, a Coca-Cola entrou em contato e falou, olha, a gente está celebrando 100 anos e eu queria usar o Howold. E eu queria que quando alguém fizesse um upload de uma foto e tivesse com uma garrafa de Coca-Cola, né, o seu algoritmo de Machine Learning detectasse a garrafa e colocasse 100 anos nela. Então, a gente trabalhou nisso e fez isso para promover a Coca-Cola. Então essas coisas começaram, de repente o Howold virou uma marca por si só. Nós tivemos, no primeiro mês de lançamento do Howold, foram 250 milhões de fotos. Até hoje eu não acredito nesse número, a gente olha e fala, não é possível. E foi, em termos de crescimento, foi um dos sites que cresceu mais rápido na história. Mas também é um site viral, né? Ele cresceu muito rápido, depois ele voltou. Hoje ele tem alguns milhares de acessos por dia, não é uma coisa absurda mais, mas foi uma experiência muito divertida. E aí, depois disso, acabou o evento do Build, nós tivemos o Build Tour. Então, o John, eu e mais uns colegas, nós começamos a viajar pelo mundo e apresentar o conceito do o que nós apresentamos no Build em vários lugares. E eu estava na República Tcheca, e eu cheguei lá no hotel, e o hotel não tinha quarto para mim. Então, se eu ia apresentar no dia seguinte, eu tinha que sentar no saguão do hotel e esperar liberar um quarto. Eu falei, ah, quer saber, eu vou... E eu estava com um colega meu, Pete Brown. Eu falei para ele, quer saber, eu vou fazer um outro site igual aquele. Aí ele olhou assim para mim, hein? Eu falei, eu quero fazer um site onde você coloca duas fotos e ele te diz se a foto é da mesma pessoa ou não, ou quão parecidas elas são. E aí eu fiz esse site chamado Twins or Not, e a brincadeira, eu estava com meu colega Jeff, eu queria ficar mais parecido com ele, então eu descobri que se eu colocasse uma peruca loura, o algoritmo falava que eu tinha 41% de similaridade, mas sem a peruca era só 12%. Então, assim, descobri que para ficar mais parecido com o Jeff, eu tinha que colocar a peruca loura. Aí eu lancei esse site, apresentei lá na República Tcheca. Eu levei 4 horas para fazer esse site, porque ele é simples. ASP.NET, o código está aberto no GitHub. É muito estúpido o site, não requer nada demais. Aí a gente demonstrou no evento lá em Praga, e aí depois do evento eu fui para o hotel e de repente começa a me ligar todos os advogados do Microsoft. Falando, meu filho, o que, que você fez? Eu falei, eu botei esse site lá. Você colocou o logotipo da Microsoft e tudo? Coloquei. Você perguntou se podia fazer isso? Não. Você sabe que seu site está sendo blogado em todos os lugares? Não, não sabia. Aí comecei a ver que todo mundo estava blogando sobre o site. Então, a Telecom Itália brincou com o site, a Huawei brincou com o site também. Aí começou a aparecer no Verge, por aí. E eles comentando, olha, esse sujeito do Microsoft fez o site em 4 horas e colocou no ar. E eu não pedi autorização para fazer. Então, tivemos um momento ali meio delicado, onde ele falou, você não pode fazer isso. Eu falei, desculpa, né? Mas... não tem ninguém reclamando. Então, tá bom. Então, tudo bem. Então, aí fizemos o site, tá, publicamos. E de novo, foi muito interessante. Aí passou um tempo e chegou... véspera de novembro, recentemente, e tem uma organização que chama Movember, que ela, todo mês de novembro, ela promove consciência sobre o câncer masculino, câncer testicular, câncer de próstata, e ela coleta doações para combater o câncer. E aí, nós conversando com o pessoal do Project Oxford, nós tivemos essa ideia, e se a gente usasse as mesmas APIs de reconhecimento facial para medir o tamanho do bigode e da barba das pessoas, né? E usasse isso para promover a ideia. Então, pedimos alguns... planejamos a ideia do site, começamos a criar, e todos os voluntários, porque essas são coisas que a gente faz no nosso tempo livre, assim, ninguém está pagando a gente para fazer isso. Mas todos os voluntários que eu tinha para me ajudar a fazer o site desapareceram. Aí eu falei, nossa, e aí o pessoal do Project Oxford, mas a gente já combinou com a organização do Movember, tem que fazer o site. E eu falei, eu não tenho tempo. Aí o Joe me ligou, I'll tell this part in English, when I realized I had no volunteers to work with the Movember thing. And then you reach out and link and say, hey, I see you are planning to do this site. Do you need any help? Said, yes, please, I need your help. Thank you. So, aí o John veio oferecer ajuda, e basicamente eu, o John e o Elliot, um outro colega nosso, nós fizemos esse site que chama My Mustache. E aí a ideia é o seguinte, você vai, deixa eu abrir o site aqui, você faz o upload de uma foto, né? Por exemplo, vamos pegar esse casal aqui, você faz o upload, ele usa o reconhecimento facial e ele vai te dar um score do tamanho da sua barba, né? Em relação, por exemplo, ela não tem barba nenhuma, ele tem muita barba. E se você não tiver barba, tudo bem, porque aí o que nós fizemos? Nós temos o auto-stash, que a ideia é ele vai, desenha e coloca o bigode. E isso aqui dá um trabalho, vocês não fazem ideia como deu trabalho fazer o bigode encaixar. Depois a gente vai dar uma apresentação só sobre essa parte de construir esse site e ter uma sessão só sobre a ciência de encaixar um mustache na cara da pessoa, porque não é tão fácil quanto parece. Mas aí nós fizemos esse site e publicamos. dessa vez nós seguimos à risca as regras da Microsoft, o que inclusive deu um trabalho, porque aí você tem... nós somos muito rigorosos na Microsoft com relação a, por exemplo, privacidade. Então, quando você envia uma foto dessa no nosso site, nós temos que garantir que a sua foto não vai ser guardada, a menos que você diga que tudo bem, né, e eu quero guardar sua foto. Então, tem uma série de regras que nós temos que obedecer, que nós sempre obedecemos. Mas a equipe de segurança vai rever o seu site para ter certeza. Aí os advogados vêm e olham para ter certeza. Aí, não sei... Então, é bastante trabalhoso. Mas aí o site também ficou popular, começou a ser blogado por ali, as pessoas começaram a falar dele. Uma coisa que eu gostei muito
foi isso aqui. Eu gostei das mulheres brincando com o site, falando, ah, agora eu posso participar do Movember, né? Porque agora eu tenho um bigode, né? E eu achei muito legal que elas se sentiram incluídas na campanha. Eu achei muito, muito interessante isso. E não tem nada de especial nisso que a gente fez, absolutamente nada. Aí a pessoa fala, nossa, mas machine learning, isso é muito complicado. Não é. O que nós estamos usando são APIs já prontas, que a Microsoft tem, a gente chama de Project Oxford, que são APIs que elas pegam essas tarefas complicadas que envolvem machine learning e elas já fazem aquilo pronto e te dão um REST, um Web Service REST, que você chama e fala, olha, está aqui minha imagem, o que você me diz dessa imagem? E você pode usar de qualquer lugar, você pode usar isso de aplicações móveis, você pode usar isso de, por exemplo, deixa eu abrir aqui. Então, se você vai no projectoxford.ai, né, você tem aqui, por exemplo, o reconhecimento de rosto. Por exemplo, a gente acabou de lançar reconhecimento de emoções. Então, reconhecimento de emoções, como é que funciona isso? Você envia foto, ele vai detectar os rostos e ele vai te falar, olha, esse rosto, deixa eu ampliar aqui, ele te dá um score de, por exemplo, raiva, felicidade, neutro, tristeza, surpresa, né, com base naquela expressão facial. Então, imagina as coisas interessantes que dá para fazer com isso. Né? Detectar se o usuário está ficando irritado com a sua interface, ou está apressado, ou está feliz. Né? Interagir. Por exemplo, nós estávamos brincando com a ideia de fazer um alarme que de manhã ele toca e ele não para de tocar enquanto você não sorri para a câmera. Então, né? Então aí tira uma foto e coloca no Facebook essa cara, né, meio torta sorrindo. Né? Mas são coisas fantásticas que, de repente, se tornaram muito simples. E essas são APIs que estão sendo publicadas gradualmente. O pessoal do Project Oxford está lançando cada vez mais APIs. Então, você tem não só reconhecimento de rosto, você tem reconhecimento de texto. Deixa eu voltar aqui mais. Reconhecimento de fala. Né? Reconhecimento de texto, por exemplo, computer vision. Você tira uma foto e ele vai te falar, olha, estou vendo uma estação de trem, veja um cachorro, veja um gato, né? A cor predominante dessa foto é azul. Então, ele fala várias coisas com relação à foto, ele tem reconhecimento de texto dentro da foto. Por exemplo, vamos supor que você tem um site onde as pessoas enviam e compartilham imagens, e você quer evitar que alguém coloque uma foto de uma pessoa sem roupa. Né? Essa API vai te indicar isso, fala, olha, tem o nudismo nessa foto, o score está muito alto, então provavelmente existe pornografia nessa foto, então você já automaticamente bloqueia sem precisar que uma pessoa vá lá e reveja a foto cada vez. Então, tem várias dessas características que estão disponíveis nessas APIs. É muito interessante que hoje nós temos esses recursos dentro das APIs. Eu estou falando das APIs do Oxford, mas vamos supor que vocês queiram fazer coisas com machine learning que não estão disponíveis aqui. Então, o próximo passo é a nossa plataforma machine learning. O Azure tem uma plataforma chamada Azure Machine Learning, que se você vier aqui no azure.com, se você clicar em machine learning, você tem duas opções. Uma é usar APIs e modelos prontos, e a outra é construir os seus modelos. E o que é fantástico disso é que até pessoas normais como eu, que não são cientistas de dados, que não são especialistas em machine learning, conseguem usar até como uma forma de aprendizado. Essa ferramenta é muito interessante porque ela é visual. Né? Eu monto como eu recebo os dados, como eu trabalho esses dados, particiono colunas, escolho algoritmos para trabalhar esses dados, treino meus modelos, coleto os resultados, depois eu pego esse modelo inteiro e transformo num web service que eu posso chamar de uma aplicação iOS ou de uma aplicação web e reutilizar isso ali. Então, vamos supor, por exemplo, eu tenho aqui dentro da plataforma de machine learning, deixa eu pegar aqui, por exemplo, o que eu ia abrir? Não era isso que eu ia abrir. Eu ia abrir a galeria. Aqui. Você tem uma galeria de exemplos. Essa galeria é muito interessante, porque vamos supor que você queira fazer um caso super típico. recomendação de produtos. Né? A pessoa vai no meu site, comprou produto A, produto B e produto C, agora o outro cliente vai ali e compra produto A, provavelmente ele quer o produto B também, com base no histórico dos outros clientes. Como eu faço isso? Já tem esses modelos prontos. Se eu for procurar ali, por exemplo, recomendação de filmes, recomendação de produtos, esses modelos são extremamente parecidos. Então, eu já abro aquele modelo na galeria, tem uma galeria de vários e vários exemplos, como eu detecto se um cliente está abandonando o meu site, gradualmente está deixando de usar o meu site. Eu quero saber esse momento para eu tentar me reaproximar desse cliente, mandar uma mensagem, perguntar se está tudo bem, tem algo que eu possa fazer, que a gente chama de customer churn. Tem esses modelos prontos. Então, eu vou ali e uso esses modelos. O que eu costumo fazer é usar isso como aprendizado. Eu vou ali, como eles construíram esse modelo? O que foi que eles fizeram? E aí eu tento refazer aquilo. Então, o que é fantástico é que eu acho que nós estamos vivendo um momento único em que machine learning está se tornando acessível a todos nós. Não é mais uma coisa só para o cientista de dados que fica trancado ali no laboratório, que passou a vida inteira estudando aquilo, que consegue fazer. Tem uma série de cenários. Claro que ainda tem cenários que só o cientista de dados sabe fazer ainda, mas tem uma série de cenários agora que são acessíveis a todos nós. E eu penso que todos vocês aqui trabalham com sistemas que em algum momento eles geram ou manuseiam dados. Dados armazenados num banco de dados, num log, dados de alguma forma. E esses bancos de dados que estão ali em todos os lugares, o que acontece? Eles vão crescendo e ao decorrer do tempo a gente vai, pega o histórico e joga fora. Elimina. Pega o histórico e elimina. Pega o histórico, elimina. Porque ocupa espaço, né? Aquilo é uma mina de ouro que nós não estamos explorando hoje. No máximo, o que se faz hoje em dia é um relatório. É um relatóriozinho com um comando SQL aqui, que faz um join de três tabelas e me mostra uns. Mas nós não estamos explorando com essas ferramentas o que é possível extrair desses dados. E muita coisa. Por exemplo, teve dois desenvolvedores na Microsoft que fizeram um jogo e eles queriam detectar qual é um desses jogos onde você, durante o jogo, compra itens, ou compra uma espada, compra um escudo, compra não sei o quê. Né? E eles queriam detectar qual é o momento ideal dentro do jogo onde aquele usuário específico, dentro daquele contexto, provavelmente vai querer comprar alguma coisa. Para que eu faça, você quer comprar uma espada agora? Quero. Então, o que eles fizeram? Extraíram os dados de comportamento dentro do jogo, de como o jogador se comporta, que momentos ele compra, que tipo de perfil de jogador é mais provável. Jogaram isso aqui, analisaram e criaram um padrão onde eles conseguem. E agora o que o jogo faz? Ele pergunta para esse web service do machine learning, é agora, vou tentar vender. E aí ele melhora a forma como ele consegue vender itens do jogo. Então imagina as possibilidades que existem dentro desse contexto. Então, eu queria deixar essa mensagem de que essas coisas que nós estamos usando nesses sites, elas não são específicas, especiais, e só algumas pessoas conseguem usar. Elas estão todas disponíveis, vocês todos podem usar também. Ok? Então, eu acho que eu já estou até acabando. Então, eu falei do Project Oxford, que tem essas APIs específicas de reconhecimento de face, de voz, de visão. Tem essa API que a gente chama de LUIS, mas é porque é a abreviatura de entendimento de linguagem, mas ela consegue entender a intenção de linguagem. A sua. Foi homenagem ao LUIS. Tem essa galeria de APIs e tem essa galeria de modelos. E agora a gente está começando a chamar de Cortana Analytics, né? A gente está colocando o brain de Cortana, porque as pessoas associam Cortana com coisas inteligentes que o computador faz, mas continua sendo essas APIs de machine learning. Outra coisa que nós usamos nesse site, e nós vamos falar disso depois na próxima apresentação à tarde, nós usamos uma série de ferramentas do Azure. Uma delas, por exemplo, é o Traffic Manager. Nós percebemos que para o site do Mustache, tem um público muito grande na China que acessa esse site. Então, o que, que nós fizemos? Nós publicamos um site nos Estados Unidos e o outro na China. E aí nós configuramos o Traffic Manager do Azure. O Traffic Manager, ele olha de onde o browser está chegando e faz o roteamento até o site mais próximo. Então, nós temos sites espalhados pelo mundo e nós levamos o browser ao lugar mais próximo para que a latência seja a menor possível. Então, nós fazemos isso com o Traffic Manager. Extremamente fácil de fazer. Nós usamos Application Sites. Application Sites é fantástico. Se você tem aplicações web, aplicações móveis, aplicação iOS, Android, o que for, e você quer monitorar, diagnosticar o que está acontecendo com a sua aplicação, isso aqui você configura em segundos. Você habilita isso na aplicação e ela vai te dizer, olha, o seu site está mais lento, ele está lento porque essa página demora demais. Esses são os erros que você está recebendo. Eles acontecem com mais frequência nesse browser, nessa plataforma. Em aplicações móveis, isso é fundamental. Por exemplo, às vezes tem um erro que só acontece naquela versão do Android, naquele device, naquele horário, né? E o Application Sites vai te falar isso. Ele vai te falar em que linha de código lá do iOS, do Swift, aquele erro está acontecendo, em que dispositivo, em que versão. E habilitar esse recurso é ridiculamente fácil. Então, quem não está usando, está perdendo uma oportunidade enorme, porque isso faz a sua vida ficar muito mais fácil em termos de diagnóstico. Outra coisa que nós usamos muito é o Deployment Slots. Isso talvez seja o meu recurso favorito no Azure. A ideia é que você faz o seu site está em produção, tem várias pessoas utilizando, você não quer tirar o site do ar, né? Porque todo mundo está usando agora, você está fazendo a versão nova, corrigindo erros, etc. O que, que você faz? Você cria uma cópia do seu site, que só você pode acessar. E aí você testa essa cópia, garante que essa cópia funciona, que é uma versão nova, que faz tudo que você gostaria que fizesse, e aí você troca esses sites, você faz o que a gente chama de swap, a gente troca esses sites. E essa troca acontece em uma fração de segundos. E aí todo mundo que acessava o site antigo de produção agora acessa o site novo. E aí agora eu faço a nova versão, né? De novo instalo no site de teste, de novo faço swap e continuo repetindo esse ciclo. Então é um ciclo onde você quase nunca precisa tirar o site do ar para fazer atualizações. A gente usa isso muito nesses sites virais porque a gente não quer tirar eles do ar, né? não quer perder a oportunidade dos acessos que a gente recebe. Uma coisa que a gente anunciou recentemente é o Power Apps. Vocês ouviram falar do Power Apps? Já? Então, o Power Apps lembra aquela situação quando você está ocupado, cheio de trabalho, e aí vem um gerente e fala, eu preciso que você faça uma aplicação para monitorar, para me dar um relatório de quantas vezes o cachorro passa na frente da rua. Não tenho tempo para isso. Tal. E você gostaria que ele pudesse resolver o problema sozinho. Então, o Power Apps ele é uma ferramenta que permite um não programador, uma pessoa que não tem experiência de programação, que resolva, que não só crie aplicações muito simples ou fluxos muito simples, sem a dependência de um programador. E sempre quando a gente fala isso, os programadores falam, isso nunca vai funcionar. Papo furado, isso aí nunca vai funcionar. Eu pensava assim até que eu vi pessoas fazendo e falando ali, eu fiz. Lógico, tem limitações. Não espera que isso vai substituir um programador, nunca vai acontecer. Mas, graças a Deus. Mas, dá para resolver muita coisa. A ideia é que você publica web services, tem os da Microsoft, tem os seus, e o seu departamento de TI gerencia e permite, então eles controlam isso, e falam, esses web services estão permitidos para que todo mundo venha e crie aplicações multiplataforma. Então, por exemplo, deixa eu escolher aqui fazer uma app. Eu tenho uma galeria de templates, de exemplos, um gerenciador de contatos, gerenciador de eventos, gerenciador de oportunidades. Eu pego aquilo ali, ele abre uma ferramenta, parece o PowerPoint, você arrasta e solta os botões, conecta os web services, escreve umas formulinhas, parecem fórmulas do Excel, e sua aplicação está pronta, você publica para iOS, Android, Windows e elas funcionam perfeitamente. Ou se você não quiser fazer uma aplicação, vamos supor que você só quer automatizar um processo. Eu quero, por exemplo, que toda vez que chega um e-mail, eu quero criar essa mensagem no Dropbox. Ou toda vez que eu recebo uma oportunidade, eu quero criar essa oportunidade no Salesforce. Pode ser web service de terceiros, não precisa ser da Microsoft. Eu quero automatizar tarefas. Então, eu vou e arrasto e solto as caixinhas e automatizo esses processos e publico aquilo ali. Então, isso o público-alvo disso não é o programador normal, mas é aquela pessoa que tem uma necessidade de automatizar tarefas, de criar fluxos simples e não quer ficar dependendo de vocês, porque vocês têm coisas mais importantes para fazer para resolver esses problemas. Então, é uma ferramenta muito interessante, a gente acabou de falar dela, que vale a pena explorar e ela vai crescer aí bastante ao decorrer do tempo. A última coisa que eu não mencionei, nós estamos já atrasados, nós anunciamos o Visual Studio Dev Essentials, que é um pacote gratuito, que para um desenvolvedor que queira trabalhar na plataforma Microsoft, ele te dá praticamente tudo que você precisa em termos de ferramentas. A gente falou de Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, Visual Studio Express, tem Foundation para gerenciar o seu time de desenvolvimento, uma série de materiais e assinaturas para treinamento. Então, a Xamarin University, para você aprender a fazer aplicações móveis que funcionam em todas as plataformas usando Xamarin, o Intellect, Pluralsight, ferramentas de treinamento, que você pode assistir cursos online, treinar, uma assinatura do Azure que te dá $25 por mês durante 12 meses. Então, você tem uma série de serviços gratuitos dentro do Azure que você pode usar para experimentar e aprender a usar aquilo ali. Parallels Desktop, se você tem um Mac e quer rodar o Windows no Mac, ele te dá 3 meses de Parallels Desktop para você rodar o Windows dentro do Mac. Ou seja, ele te dá um pacote de coisas de graça para você poder começar a trabalhar com a plataforma Microsoft. Então, isso é interessante de explorar também. E no mais, nós estamos encerrando, nós temos, depois do intervalo, eu tenho uma outra sessão onde eu vou falar de autenticação e Microsoft Graph, tem outras apresentações também, então eu quero agradecer vocês por estar aqui hoje. Obrigado.
Obrigado, Matt.
Oi.
Vai ligar? Ok, já está. Pessoal, não saiam já, pedi-vos, aguardem só mais um bocadinho, vamos só terminar e encerrar aqui a parte da keynote, mas tinha aqui uma mensagem importante. Ok. É muito rápido. Pronto, um dos pontos que nós queríamos aqui falar, deixa-me só pôr isto a rodar. Ok. Pronto, está relacionado com a comunidade e o esforço que nós estamos a fazer aqui para juntar todas as pessoas que em Portugal trabalham com a componente web, independentemente da tecnologia. E nós queremos fazer alguns anúncios dos esforços que nós estamos a tentar juntar todas as comunidades com as meetups que existem cá em Portugal. Existem várias a decorrer ao longo de todo o ano. Nós estamos a tentar fazer um esforço para mostrar a todos quando é que essas meetups acontecem, ajudar a trazer alguns speakers internacionais para enriquecer essas comunidades. Um exemplo só, e aqui nós em janeiro vamos ter um evento também para as agências web, ou seja, que é uma audiência diferente, mas que nós queremos trazer e aproximar da nossa comunidade de desenvolvimento, porque de facto eles próprios têm esta necessidade e acho que vai trazer um valor acrescentado aqui para quem trabalha esta área. E depois temos também alguns projetos muito interessantes. Eu ia pedir aqui ao Rafael e ao Filipe para darem uma palavrinha. É um projeto que nasce, é um exemplo de uma boa execução que pode vir de uma comunidade de meetup e que trabalha pontualmente. Filipe, Desculpa, Vitor. E o Rafael, força.
Olá, bom dia a todos. Nós lançámos aqui uma nova iniciativa, um meetup para nós, para developers. E o que nós pretendemos, no fundo, é implementar ideias. Fugir um bocadinho dos meetups de discussão de novas tecnologias, levar isso mais longe e usá-las para concretizar projetos. Portanto, estes projetos pretendem-se que sejam coisas úteis para nós todos, para a sociedade, para a comunidade. Não temos fins lucrativos, portanto, não é para ganhar dinheiro. É simplesmente para, através deste processo, de ter um objetivo concreto de fazer um projeto, trocar experiências e aprender coisas novas. Okay? Portanto, é uma abordagem um bocado mais... uma abordagem muito prática da aplicação de conhecimento. Okay? Para concretizar isto, precisamos de pessoas, não é? Nós é que vamos fazer isto tudo. Portanto, sem pessoas é difícil de fazer. E como somos programadores, somos pessoas técnicas, é nestas áreas que nós queremos atuar. E, portanto, não é exclusivo de programadores. Um sistema informático precisa de muito mais competências do que programadores. E precisamos da vossa ajuda. E, portanto, estamos abertos, developers, designers, especialistas de UX, que é uma coisa também muito importante. Ideias, quem tem alguma ideia queira apresentar. E vamos fazer a nossa primeira reunião já neste sábado, dia 5, na Main Hub, que nos cedeu o seu espaço para nós reunirmos. E o que pretendemos é realmente discutir as ideias e escolher qualquer coisa que toda a gente esteja interessada e queira ver acontecer. Okay? Portanto, convidamos a vocês todos... se acham isto uma proposta interessante, vir ter connosco e a registar-se. Ok? Obrigado.
Só vos queria dar uma nota. Nós estamos juntos com o Rafael, o Vítor e o Filipe, que é outra pessoa que vai aparecendo aqui, mas na verdade a nossa ideia aqui foi Code for Glory, not for Money. E a questão aqui vai ser a seguinte: isto vai acontecer no próximo sábado. Nós já temos um stack de algumas ideias que estão definidas. Nosso objetivo aqui é ser socialmente relevantes. Nós somos programadores, somos developers, somos UXers, somos designers. Nós temos o nosso poder mudar o mundo. Temos o nosso poder de fazer coisas fantásticas, brutais. Porque nós temos a capacidade de criar aplicações, temos a capacidade de repensar como é que as pessoas interagem com interfaces e nós somos o futuro. Mas acho que também que devemos dar um pouco. E nós, os três, acreditamos muito na comunidade, como a Microsoft acha que o poder está na comunidade. E nós queremos dinamizar isso, queremos só dinamizar. E por isso, contamos convosco, próximo sábado. O que vai acontecer aqui, o stack vai ser muito rápido, vai ser, nós vamos, temos uma lista de projetos, vão aparecer pessoas novas, vão-nos dizer quais são os projetos que também gostavam de incluir, vamos discutir enquanto comunidade e a comunidade vai decidir. Okay? E o que vamos fazer a seguir vai ser distribuir o que é que temos que fazer e vamos realizar, vamos concretizar. Nesse processo, o nosso objetivo é aprender tecnologias. Vamos aprender em conjunto, como companheiros, como alguém que percorre um caminho que tem um objetivo. Okay? Por isso, nós vamos estar aqui, se quiserem falar connosco durante este processo, vamos estar aqui o dia todo, falem connosco, mas vemo-nos próximo sábado, ok? Um abraço, obrigado.
Obrigado, Rafael, Vítor. E pronto, para terminar, só algumas mensagens aqui para vocês aproveitarem o dia o melhor possível. Vocês têm a agenda no vosso badge, validem o roll-up todos, têm as várias salas, nem toda a gente sabe onde é que são as salas. Relembro que as salas Windows são no terceiro piso, as da Azure são estas, e temos o showroom que é no outro lado, neste piso, daquele lado do edifício, ok? Pedimos encarecidamente que escrevam e preencham o formulário de feedback do evento. É com isto que nós aprendemos a melhorar os eventos, mas desta vez, para quem entregar, recebe dois stickers que estão trendy, por isso aproveitem, isto é a nossa motivação para vocês preencherem o feedback, ok? E finalmente, uma nota importante, que também isto lá vem do feedback,
Nós criámos ali uma zona de Speakers Corner. Os speakers vão também desfrutar das sessões durante o dia, mas nós pedimos para, em todos os breaks, pelo menos passarem lá. Por isso, se vocês tiverem e quiserem falar com algum dos speakers, o melhor local há de ser naquela zona é ali a caminho do showroom. Ok? Obrigado.